This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Hawaii Democratic Representative Tulsi Gabbard has been named as one of several possible presidential contenders for 2020. Gabbard is the Samoan-American Iraq War veteran and first Hindu to be elected to the House of Representatives, who made waves when she resigned from her post as vice chair of the DNC last year to endorse Senator Bernie Sanders for president. But Tulsi Gabbard once gave a forceful argument against same-sex marriage, has flirted with Islamophobia, and is admired by white supremacists like Richard Spencer, David Duke, and Steve Bannon. Some progressives have come to her defense, citing her anti-war views. Who is Tulsi Gabbard, and does she really embody progressive values? Joining me to help answer that question is Tenmori Soundararajan. She is a Dalit American trans media artist and activist. She's also the executive director of the South Asian Technology Collective Equality Labs. Welcome to the program, Tenmori.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So it's confusing, I think, for a lot of progressives, because on some parts of the political spectrum, Tulsi falls to the left. On some issues, she has views that align with the right wing. And so it's quite confusing. You know, she's a woman of color. She's an Iraq war vet. She's spoken out against war. What is your criticism? And you are one of her strong critics on the left. What is your criticism of Tulsi Gabbard really based on?
Well, I think what's really important about looking at Tulsi is really asking all progressives to do better than what we did in our last election. And I think one of the things that we saw, you know, particularly with the toxic candidate of Hillary Clinton, is that we have another Hillary 2.0 in Tulsi Gabbard. Because in embracing Tulsi, we are asking core progressive constituencies that are South Asian, that are Arab, that are immigrant, to basically be quiet, be silent in the face of her Islamophobia and her connections to global fascism. And this is one of the main reasons why we have been part of a national campaign called Tulsi Gotta Go, to basically educate our fellow folks on the left to say, we have to be able to do better than a toxic candidate like Tulsi. And in doing that, we have to look first at her relationship with, this philosophy called, you know, Hindu fascism, or Hindutva, as we call it in India, because that's one of her core framings and her core origins with her Islamophobia.
And we should mention, she's not actually Indian. Her first name is Indian. Her father is Samoan, and she was raised in Hawaii. Her mother is a white American who adopted Hinduism. And that's, you know, as a teenager, Tulsi converted to Hinduism and then went on to become the first Hindu to be elected to the House of Representatives. Is her religion her main connection to India, for example, where she has traveled and met with Prime Minister Narendra Modi?
Yes, but I think I want to make a distinction here. I'm not opposed to her because of her religion. I'm opposed to her because of her connections to Hindu fundamentalism and the philosophy of Hindutva. And I think anyone who's a progressive would really want to have a pause to ask, why did Tulsi stump for someone who was known to be connected to the Gujarat riots? You know, and these were mass pogroms where, you know, we saw hundreds of Muslims that were murdered in the street and thousands more displaced
And that was the basis for which Narendra Modi, before he was prime minister, when he was minister of Gujarat, was denied a U.S. visa. Didn't she come to her to his defense? Didn't she criticize that U.S. decision?
Yes. She basically said that it was inappropriate for the U.S. to take a position, and was one of the strongest advocates to be able to have him return back into the country. And I think what's critical for Americans to look at is that all of this positioning that she has made with the Indian fascists that are Hindu fundamentalists come at a financial investment in her campaign. So they, you know, many of her top fundraisers come from Hindu fundamentalists all around the United States. And she, you know, she's not a casual friend to the Modi administration. She stumped for him in India and continues to push Indian fundamentalist positions related to the rest of the South Asian region in her representation at the Foreign Affairs Committee of the United States. So, you know, as someone who's a progressive, I do not want someone with connection to violent global fascist ties to be making our foreign policy in the country. And I think this is one of the most dangerous things about Tulsi. But it doesn't stop there, because she has, you know, much of that worldview continues to inform her Islamophobia and the rest of the other foreign affairs positions that she takes, you know, whether it's her coziness with Assad and wanting to dismiss Syrian rebels as operatives of ISIS or the CIA, or, you know, her connections to, you know, really regressive Zionist forces and, you know, the condemning of, you know, Palestinian self-determination efforts, to her coziness, you know, with the dictator of Egypt. Like, so I think that what we see is, you know, she's very, very tight with people who are authoritarian and fascist, and particularly in Muslim-dominated countries. And in terms of domestic policy, you know, before the Muslim ban, there was already under Obama a Republican piece of legislation that would ban Syrian and Iraqi refugees. And there was only two Asian American Democrats that sided with the Republicans on that piece of legislation. And Tulsi was one of them, you know, and it was such a break, because Asian American legislators as a whole, particularly those that are Democrat, know we come from a background in this country where we have faced the brunt of, you know, exclusionary immigration policies. So for her to break from the rest of the Democratic Party, the rest of the Asian American caucus, to target Muslim refugees in this way, it's a very disturbing trend of Islamophobia that we have to ask questions about as those of us that are progressives, and really, you know, talk about Tulsi as a toxic candidate and the Hillary 2.0 of our time.
What about her homophobia? This is something that we hear being talked about very rarely. It was a while ago that she made a public argument against same-sex marriage. Where does that come from? You know, and have her views evolved? Because, of course, we should be able to embrace people who can say, I was wrong back then, and now I've been enlightened, or my eyes have been opened.
Well, I think that what is telling, so again, like, you know, Tulsi's background is that she comes from a splinter cult of the Hare Krishnas that was very popular in Hawaii. And, you know, the leader of that splinter cult was known for his extremely conservative social views, including virulent homophobia. So that is the origin of her personal views about same-sex marriage. And so I think that, you know, early in her career, she was very open about the fact that she, you know, opposed gay marriage. And while she's reversed that from a policy position, she's been very clear that while she doesn't approve of government intervention in the social sphere, nothing has changed about her personal views about the rightness or the wrongness of, you know, queer relationships and queer marriage. And I think what I find troubling about that as a progressive is that I want a candidate that is going to fight for all of us. And this is one of the main reasons we had so many people stand up for Bernie Sanders, because they felt like you not only had a champion of someone who was going to take down the powers that be, but he legitimately represented the people. And, you know, many, many Sanders supporters went very, very hard against the Muslim, South Asian, and immigrant women that were part of the origin of the Tulsi Gotta Go social media campaign. And for those folks, I want to ask them, you know, if Muslim and immigrant and South Asian women are not the voices that are leading the progressive conversation for where we go as a movement, then who in fact is progressive? And we say that we find Tulsi homophobic, we find her Islamophobic, and we are scared if she is a presidential candidate for 2020, what that means in terms of the safety of our communities. And the progressive movement needs to listen to us, it needs to center us, and we have to understand that she's a toxic candidate who is not our friend, and she is not, you know, Tulsi has got to go.
So let's talk about, so we've covered her Islam, her homophobia. Let's focus a little bit more on the Islamophobia part of it. And I mentioned that The KKK's David Duke has tweeted in admiration of her, although she then 3 days later came out and rejected that. Steve Bannon has said to have backed her or is an admirer of her. Richard Spencer, the overt white supremacist, has called her brave. Where does that come from? Does that come from her embrace of Islamophobia? She was one of the people who thought that Barack Obama should have used the term radical Islam, and that he, that she's sort of been very strong on wanting to call out, Muslim terrorists or Islamic terrorists, etc.
Well, I think what's really important is that, is that we need to not step into our opponent's frames. So because Tulsi says that she is anti-interventionist does not mean that she is anti-war. And that's what's really critical to understanding her position being a war hawk. Because, all of her conversations about, not invading Syria or, backing Assad versus listening to the rebels come from a place where she doesn't want to have boots on the ground in the official sense of an intervention. That said, she has always said, and if you go to her site where she talks about running as a candidate, she still believes that we should have targeted military intervention to take out ISIS. So, what that means is, drone strikes or targeted missiles. And, frankly, anytime the American government says that it's going to use like military operations in a targeted way, you can always count on the fact that civilians are going to be the first casualty and the most silent casualty. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she continually focuses on the domestic experience of war as a reason for us not to intervene, but does not eliminate the need to be able to fight and target and kill those that are named as ISIS, is the problem, and which is why she's loved so much by the alt-right, because they love her Islamophobia, they love her war hawkishness, and they love that she's willing to push an aggressive American foreign policy agenda against Islam.
So, and this is what she had said last year when talking about Obama mentioning the words radical Islam. She said, this is not just about words, it's not about semantics, it's about having a real true understanding of who our enemy is and how important mm-hmm. that is, that we have to understand what their motivation is and what their ideology is, the radical Islamic ideology that is fueling them. Now, most yeah. progressives who've looked at why there is terrorism, what the origins of Al-Qaeda and ISIS are, often make the case that historic U.S. intervention in the Middle East and decades of bombings and starvation through sanctions is what has fueled the anger at the West. But she seems to want to limit that to the radical Islamic ideology that is fueling them, which is very much in line with what a lot of the right-wing conservatives say, what Trump has said when he wants to, and actually even what a lot of Democratic leaders sadly have restricted their criticism to. So on the issue of Syria, she went to Syria recently on a so-called fact-finding mission.
That's right.
Turned out she met with Bashar al-Assad, the Syrian president, and I'm wondering, Tanmori, if you think that the fact that some sectors of the left back Assad as some sort of socialist hero and is the reason why they feel that Tulsi Gabbard is their friend.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, but I think that the fact that you have people on the left willing to support someone as violent as Assad shows to me the failure of American progressive politics
yeah.
and how isolationist people are in the progressive frame. That, we can't adhere to a strict Cold War model that robs the autonomy of the countries in those regions and the people of those regions to say what is happening to them, what is the violence that they're surviving, and what are the solutions that they want. If you have a leftist trying to tell me that the person that they advocate for self-determination of the Syrian people is someone who is of royalty and using weapons of mass destruction against the Syrian people, I'm going to tell you to stop stop talking, you know. And I think it's the same issue when we're looking at, you know, when we're looking at, you know, Tulsi's relationships with India and Hindutva. There is no way that we can have a progressive leftist analysis that looks at Tulsi's relationship with one of the largest global fascist movements in the country and not have a position that that is negative to the liberatory possibilities of our movements in the US and for people all around the world. So we need to really embrace complexity. And I really want to ask progressives to do better and to learn from the communities that are on the front line. When I hear from Syrian, Palestinian, and immigrant women telling me, I am deeply, deeply afraid of Tulsi Gabbard, my instinct should, you know, the first instinct of every progressive shouldn't be, these are people who are stumpers for Hillary and their bra holes, which was one of the things that we were accused of, but that it should be, oh my God, this is a time of deep Islamophobia. Here are Muslim and South Asian minority communities saying that there is something wrong with the candidate that we've been fighting for this whole time. Let's listen, because maybe we don't have the piece of the information we need to make to be able to make a proper decision for 2020.
And Tenmori, several progressives have gone on record in pretty, you know, pretty respected left outlets defending Tulsi Gabbard. Jerry Condon wrote an article in defense of Tulsi Gabbard for Counterpunch. Donna Smith of Progressive Democrats of America wrote a piece in April called Standing for Peace Puts a Target on Tulsi that was published in Common Dreams. And both of those articles seem to focus entirely on or sort of characterize her positions as anti-war. Now, we've already talked about why her positions aren't necessarily anti-war, but what none of them acknowledge the Hindu fundamentalist backing and you know, the sort of relationship between Hindu fundamentalism and Tulsi Gabbard. And I think that's a really important thing because progressives have missed that entirely. This is an issue near and dear to your heart. It's one that you've worked on for a long time, particularly fighting for the rights of Dalits that Hindu fundamentalists have long thrown under the bus and tried to rewrite Hindu history. There is an organization in the United States called the Hindu American Foundation. Tell us about the relationships between Tulsi Gabbard and the Hindu American Foundation, and also how that organization has tried to rewrite American history books.
Well, I think what's interesting is that, you know, again, Hindu fundamentalism does not only work in India. It has its roots with funding in the American, you know, in the American South Asian diaspora, and they're pushing for policy positions that help to strategically align the fascist forces in India with fascist forces in the United States. And the Hindu American Foundation is a wolf in sheep's clothing that, you know, from anywhere from California textbook policy to foreign affairs, has really tried to gently push, you know, a Hindu fascist frame on many of our engagements that that are very, you know, connected to the South Asian immigrant community, but also to the American interests abroad. And I think that Tulsi has worked lockstep with the Hindu American Foundation. She's received funding from the Hindu American Political Action Committee. And anytime they have a campaign or an issue on the Hill, she takes the exact mirror position as a legislator. And I think what's very interesting is that in the case of California textbooks, she supported their positions to erase caste. She supported their positions to erase the history of gender discrimination.
And when you say erase caste, I mean, you're saying erase the casteist history of Hinduism.
Yes, erase the casteist history of Hinduism from California textbooks. So when
we would all like to erase the idea of caste.
No, absolutely. And I think also, you know, people think, well, what's a big deal about textbooks, and why are people spending thousands of dollars to change California textbooks? But, you know, there's a really deep political agenda and wanting to erase what has happened in terms of the Hindu origins of caste and the nature of patriarchy that is in Hindu scriptures to kind of create a very banal, you know, wonderful origin story for Hindu fundamentalists. But You know, we know that children grow better when they are introduced to complex histories. And to me, it was very troubling that we have a legislator from Hawaii who is not even Indian writing letters about California textbook policy to support fascist and non-factual positions to brainwash, you know, California children. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, they lost. But to me, again, it's another warning sign about, you know, the positions that are fundamentalist and fascist that Tulsi Gabbard is willing to support. And again, for progressives that are taking Tulsi's side, you know, the thing that's so challenging is the repetition of the mantra that she is anti-war. And again, what I want to say is because she's anti-interventionist does not mean that she's anti-war. She's still a hawk because she wants to use American military resources to go after ISIS. So when you're talking about missile strikes, when you're talking about drones and you're talking about consultants, that's still money, that's still people, and that's still violence. So she's not anti-war. And I think that, you know, again, all of the support pieces have come from people that are white progressives. And so if we don't want a repetition of a toxic candidate like Hillary, then I think we have to stop letting white establishment progressives define the agenda for a multiracial, interfaith progressive movement and let the communities that are on the front line of the violence determine who in fact is going to best represent who we are. And that is not Tulsi, and this is why Tulsi's got to go.
And I want to ask you about that social media campaign in just a minute. But also, of course, she, as soon as Donald Trump was elected, you know, while she was stumping for Bernie Sanders, she very forcefully spoke about the need to defeat Trump. But then as soon as Trump was elected, she went and had a meeting with Donald Trump. And many suggest she was angling for a job in the administration. When confronted about it, she basically said, you know, of course we'll disagree, but as long as we can work together. She basically said, where I disagree with President-elect Trump on issues, I will not hesitate to express that disagreement. However, I believe we can disagree even strongly, but still come together on issues that matter to the American people and affect their daily lives. It's amazing. She was willing to work with Trump.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what progressive, you know, on the, you know, in the month that Trump got elected, said that the first thing that we need to do is work with Trump and normalize his administration. You know, so I mean, again, these are, you know, you have all of this, like, you know, growing body of work that shows, you know, Tulsi's, you know, quote unquote, maverickness is actually her comfort to working with like fascist and dangerous figures. And, you know, again, you know, I remember one of the accusations we had in the social media campaign is that, you know, there was a special place in hell for women that don't support other women. But I think that, you know, what I believe we want in a progressive movement is not just, you know, blanket diversity where we have, you know, a single lone woman of color representative who espouses really fascist positions. What we want is structural equity. We want, you know, candidates that represent all of our communities, that take into account a progressive liberatory vision where our voices are centered, where we're not scared, and where we're not having to navigate, you know, really questionable ties with a candidate that has relationships with global fascist parties and with, you know, fascist figures around the world, and then pushing and doing their dirty work in American policy here. So for those reasons, Tulsi is not the candidate that we need at this time.
So hashtag Tulsi Gotta Go is the social media campaign
yes,
that
absolutely.
You and others have put forward. How is that going? Do you feel like you're convincing other progressives?
Well, I think what was really great is that she's no longer speaking at the People Summit, you know, which is going to set the agenda for many Sanders folks for the next year. But even the fact that we were able to center Arab and South Asian voices as this in this conversation, I feel has really begun to kind of put a light to the really uncomfortable conversations we need to have as a movement as a whole. And my hope is that, you know, we have leftists who are able to speak very deeply to the dangers of Hindu fundamentalism as we are to Islamophobia in a way that lets us be more nuanced and unified as a movement together. Because campaigns like this aren't about breaking unity. They're about allowing those communities that have been on the margins, that have been afraid, to come to the center and grow our numbers and grow our political vision so that we can build the world that we want.
Well, Tenmori, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck to you with all the work that you do.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
My guest is Tenmori Soundararajan. She's a Dalit American trans media artist and activist. She's also the executive director of the technology of the South Asian Technology Collective Equality Labs. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.